Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. This is WGTD 91.1 FM. Popcorn and plastic VHS and DVD covers dominated millennial life, especially my millennial life, during the late 1990s and 2000s, as our loved ones, right, huddled us after school and after practices to Blockbuster for entertainment. New technologies and poor business management collapsed the chain. But the rise and fall of the entertainment conglomerate was recently chronicled in the hit documentary, The Last Blockbuster. The doc centers on the story of my guest today, who manages the only Blockbuster left in the world in Bend, Oregon. Please welcome to Generation Now, Sandy Harding. Thanks for being here.
Oh, and thank you for having me on your show.
So I will say, I felt kind of bad reaching out to you to do this interview because, you know, here you are in Bend, Oregon, just trying to do what you do, manage your store. And in the process, you've become like an internet legend, interviews, hundreds of memes. Have you gotten used to doing interviews and kind of balancing your newfound fame with just doing your day-to-day stuff?
I am getting used to it. We actually, yes, you know, we became Last One in America. We had a huge boost of media and whatnot coming to the store. And then we became Last One in the world, and the same thing happened. And now, you know, this is kind of our fourth time around. I guess we had another big one with our Airbnb that we teamed up with and did in September. So we're getting used to the media coverage and the interviews. No one would ever guess that I have actual habit anxiety issues when it comes to doing these things, because it rolls so easy for me. But as I tell everyone, it's easy to talk about something that you love. But yeah, we're getting used to it. I can tell you this morning, I had to go to Home Depot and get some supplies. We're packing and shipping out a bunch of online orders. And I laughed because I got there and asked where zip ties were. And the girl's like, "Do you work at Blockbuster?" And I was like, "Yes." And she's like, "Oh my gosh, it's really you. What can I help you find?" And then she walked me all around the store to help me find everything I needed. And I just laughed. I'm like, I've never had that kind of treatment at Home Depot. I mean, they're always friendly, but I've never had personal service. So anyway, so I'm getting used to it. There's definitely some perks to it. But we're just hoping that we can continue to do our day-to-day stuff and it doesn't interrupt it too much.
Right. I mean, it's almost like the Michael Jackson or so treatment when you just get escorted around the store.
It's pretty funny, but you know, it's okay. You know, I appreciate it. I love the fact that they did such a great job depicting our store and our community and really showcasing what we do to survive. And you know, I'm blessed to be the face of the store. By no means am I a one woman show. I have a team of people that work for me that I could not do it without them, but I thought Zeke and Taylor did an amazing job depicting everything that about us.
So I want to start at the beginning. What kind of brought you to Blockbuster in the first place? Talk about the early days.
So I actually worked for another company for 10 years prior to coming to work here for Ken and Debbie. And I was actually just looking for a part-time job. And I reached out to one of my best friends who happened to work here. And I was like, "Get me out of the house." I had three little boys. I needed some adult conversation. I needed to get away. And she was like, "Well, we're opening up a new location and we need a manager." And I was like, "Oh man, I don't know if I want a full-time job." I was just looking for part-time. And then I just kind of got sucked in. You know, my husband had actually worked at a Blockbuster when we were first married. And he also worked for a couple of mom and pop video stores as well. And we loved movies. So it was kind of an easy no-brainer for me to get in here and, you know, get the free rentals and do the things that we already loved. You know, I always tease that Brad and I, on one of our first dates, came into this location that I'm managing now and rented movies and went and got popcorn and everything. And what was one of our first dates was renting from the store. And that was before we were married. So I always kind of laughed that the store was always destined to be a part of my life. But that was early on. That was in 04. So, and I actually came to work and opened up that location, and it was the end of late fees program rolled out about 2 weeks after we opened our store. So that was my introduction to Blockbuster.
Wow. And so how many stores were in Bend at that time? Now you're the only one in the world, but how many were just in Bend alone or the surrounding area alone at that time?
Yeah, we had four here in Bend. I opened up the fourth location, and then we had one in Redmond, which is about 15 miles north of here. So those were our five Central Oregon stores that we had. And then later on, we ended up moving that location that I worked at to Madras, which is about 45 miles north of town. And so we at one point had six different locations, but yeah, I mean, at the time when I came to work here in 04, Bend was only about 50,000 people. So we had four Blockbusters. There was a Hollywood Video here, and two or three mom and pops still here too, at the same time. So it was quite a lot of movie stores for such a small town.
Very fascinating. You mentioned something in that about kind of the end of late fees in 2004. And that was one of the first you opened a store after that. Could you talk about the kind of machinations of the business as you started in 04? Because the end of late fees was a huge deal when they announced that.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I started in August of 04 and, you know, learned everything and was dealing with customers and late fees. And December was when they rolled out the end of late fees program. But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I understood at the time kind of why they were doing that. Cause after working there for 4 months, you know, I definitely had seen, you know, the impact that having late fees had on our customers. But it seemed silly to go from one extreme to the other, because all that happened was now we had customers that weren't getting late fees, but they also weren't bringing back their movies. And so we went from having, you know, not necessarily bad customers, but customers who had late movies, you know, were not happy, to having our really good customers who did bring back our movies on time, now mad because we didn't have any movies on the shelf because nobody else was bringing them back. And so it was just from one extreme to the other. And fortunately, because we were a franchise, it was kind of short-lived for us. We obviously had to do it when it rolled out, not because we were required to, but because the media attention, I mean, they were, you remember, there was national commercials everywhere about end of late fees, and we couldn't not, you know, go with the program. But I think it was July of that year that we reinstituted like a per diem, so that people still had to bring back their movies, or else they would get charged, but it wasn't the got off of late fees that they were getting prior to end of late fees. So, and we still run that same program now where it's like 49 cents a day, you know, for every day that you're late with your movie, versus having to re-rent the whole thing and charged. And anyway, the craziness, we went away with that and kind of critiqued our own program.
When the rise, right. Yeah. When the rise of streaming took place, as you saw that kind of maybe in 2008, 2009, 2010, you see Netflix rising, you see Hulu and some others coming up. What were your initial thoughts at that time?
Well, and it's kind of funny because I was, you know, it's still a relative newbie to the company, you know, in 04, I think it was 05 when I started doing the general manager duties. That same best friend, Melissa, who suckered me into running a store, she and I were kind of, you know, the general manager left and she and I both kind of shared the duties and started doing it. And we started going to the franchise conventions with Ken. And it was kind of interesting because I'd come from another corporate business prior to that and had been to lots of different corporate meetings and whatnot. And listening to the old, I don't want to say the old boys club kind of attitude that Blockbuster had, but that's kind of what it felt like when I would go to the meetings, because they would talk about, oh, there's this new vending machine coming out that, you know, nobody's going to want to use this vending machine to get movies. And I was like, well, that's kind of a cool idea. And then they were talking about, you know, streaming and things like that, but nobody really was thinking that it was going to change anything. Everybody kind of thought, and I'm not talking about the other franchise owners, because definitely there were other franchise owners that were seeing the light, like, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to change things. And we're really trying to push for Blockbuster to do different things and kind of keep up. But there definitely was a lot of pushback from Blockbuster that, oh no, you know, we're going to roll out this by mail service that you can, you know, exchange the movies in the store. And that's going to compete with Netflix. Well, no, it's not. You know, it didn't really compete with Netflix that well. And they just kind of came in late to the game. And that was my take. Now, that's my small little take here in Bend, Oregon. I'm sure there was lots of other people who had different ideas about it. But I wasn't really impressed with the response that Blockbuster was given even way back then. So it didn't surprise me when things start to fall apart.
One of the most famous scenes from the movie, The Last Blockbuster, which you have to check out. It's ironically on Netflix. Actually, I want to ask that first. Like, what did you think when Netflix approached you to do a documentary about Blockbuster? Was it like, oh, wow, this is kind of fitting? Or were you like, wow, this is kind of a full circle moment?
So it actually wasn't done by Netflix. So that's kind of a misconception people have. But Zeke and Taylor are actual local filmmakers here in town. And so we were actually working on the movie with them prior to us even becoming the last one in America. And so they just happened to be the ones that were already working with us on a Blockbuster documentary. And then it just kind of became that we were the last one. And then they, you know, Blockbuster picked it up, or not Blockbuster, excuse me, Netflix picked it up to have it on their streaming service. So, so yeah, when they told me that they were approaching Netflix to talk about it and have it on there, I just kind of laughed because I thought how ironic that, you know, here, you know, Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix and passed on it. And then Netflix becomes incredibly, you know, just incredibly profitable and popular and just did amazingly well. And Blockbuster went under. And here we are now having the last Blockbuster movie on Netflix. It just, it is so ironic and funny. And yeah, it was just insane when they came and told me that they were pitching it to them. It's about the best thing I can say for it.
So when you, one of the most famous scenes in the documentary, The Last Blockbuster, is you going to, I believe, Costco and picking up DVDs and then going through the process of getting them ready for the store. Are you still doing that? Obviously, there's no Blockbuster Corporation. The name is owned by Dish Network, I believe. So you're having to kind of manage all of that on your own.
Yes, we do. And it's not just the movies either. I know that's a famous scene in there, but you also see me out buying candy, I think, too, in the movie. But yeah, that was one of the things when Blockbuster closed and Dish Network, you know, took over and they closed the corporate stores. All of those vendors went away. So the rev share program, we still had one company that we were still doing that with that had, you know, a good range of studios that were still part of that program with us. But with COVID coming in, that company could not keep up anymore. And so they closed last April, their DVD distribution portion. So then it went from, you know, us getting probably 60% of our movies at the local stores to getting 100% of our movies at the local store. So we still do that. I still go out every day pretty much and, you know, have to source something for the store, you know, even our reader board signs, which right now I'm ashamed to say is empty because I haven't had a minute to reprint them. But we do everything ourselves. So whether it's, you know, making our reader board signs to buying candy and popcorn to, you know, buying our DVDs, everything we do is we do ourselves. And so it truly has come full circle from when we were mom and pop, we franchised to Blockbuster, became part of the corporate world. Now we're back to running exactly the way we did when we started, which was a mom and pop. We're just operating under the Blockbuster name.
Right. And which is like something that could change at any time, right? So how do you, have you thought about what your world would look like without the name, or is it for Dish Network just something to have out there? And it's almost like a boon to the world, right? To have the last one, and it helps them really to keep you guys, or keep the, at least the name going. But have you thought about what your store, what your life would look like if they decide, hey, no more Blockbuster?
You know, I've thought about it from time to time. I can tell you that when, you know, in the movie, we talk about how I opened up that email that said the fourth and final notice. That really was legit. When I read that, I would, you know, had a little deep breath and it definitely took the air out of my lungs for a second, because I was like, oh my gosh, what would we do if they won't, you know, renegotiate and re-sign it? And a little known thing is that back in the day when Blockbuster closed corporate was that I was the one that said, oh, we should go back to being Pacific Video, because, you know, everybody in Bend knows us, knows that we were Pacific Video first before we became Blockbuster, and they would continue to support us as a local business, which they have. And everybody's like, oh no, you know, the cost to change the names and to redo the everything in the store was going to be so much. And especially, you know, at the time, nobody really knew what the future of DVD rental was going to be. So fortunately, I got vetoed and we continue to operate under the Blockbuster name. But I've thought about it, and I'm sure that the Bend community would continue to support us as Pacific Video. We would definitely not have the nostalgia of being the last Blockbuster. And I really don't think that Dish Network has anything to gain by not letting us continue to operate. I mean, I realize that they're a huge company and they have lots of things that are going on and we're just, you know, pennies in a bucket for them. But I really don't see that they have anything to gain by not renegotiating every year.
You're listening to Generation Now. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. I'm here with Sandy Harding, who is the manager of the last Blockbuster in the world. One of my favorite scenes too, I say this every time, right? Favorite scene, but it's like, it's such a good documentary. You have to see it. But one of my favorite scenes is you dusting off all of the computer parts because you don't have an upgraded system. And so you're pulling parts from computers from 2000, 2001, 2003. Are you still doing that? Have you upgraded your system since the documentary?
No, we have not. And they're actually patented in 1992. So we have floppy disks, the whole works. But no, you know, and that was another one of those things that when there were several franchises that did when corporate closed, you know, they upgraded their systems and went off the old Blockbuster system. But at the time we still had 5 stores. And again, you know, the cost of retraining, putting in new systems, all of that stuff was something that at the time we were like, well, do we really want to invest in all that when we don't know what the future of our stores is going to be? And so we kind of didn't do it for that reason. You know, the system was operating just fine. You know, yes, it's old and outdated. And my staff is always like, can we please, you know, do something different? But they all have phones with IMDb, so they can look up movies. But anyway, so at the time it was all about the cost of upgrading. And now it's the nostalgia piece. People come in and they just laugh when they see the Blockbuster computer system. And we have old employees who come in from all over the country or even all over the world for that matter, that'll come in our store and they remember their store numbers and we can add them into the computer and they can come over there and look at the computer system and remember, you know, operating it. And it's that connection that we have and that nostalgia of having those old computers that they're still working. I mean, my employees probably couldn't do what I do on them, but I graduated in 1990. I'm very familiar with these computer systems. So it's easy for me to work on them. They are pretty gross and dusty though, I have to agree.
Yeah, that's a great point that you just mentioned, that I know that your family works in the store as well, your kids, and you hire people throughout the community who are Gen Z or millennials like myself, who had very little interaction with those machines at that time. So what's the training like?
The first thing I tell them is don't overthink it. I'm like, these computer systems are so easy. I mean, you literally type in help in the computer if you can't remember one of the login codes. So I'm like, just don't overthink it. They're always looking for the mouse. And I can tell you that I do that too. Sometimes I'll come back here and work on my actual computer, you know, to do things and send emails. And then I go back up there and I grab the scanner thinking it's the mouse and start moving it around. And I'm like, oh gosh, I don't have a mouse yet. But yeah, I think that that's the biggest thing is don't overthink it. You know, it's a lot simpler. If you can read, you can operate these systems. And it takes a little bit of time because they definitely come in and kind of scratch their head. And, you know, they'll call me and be like, you know, this computer's not working. And then I'll talk them through it over the phone and I'll tell them, you know, pull out the floppy disk. And I can't tell you how many kids are like, what in the heck is a floppy disk? And then I have to explain to them how to boot it up and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, it makes for a great conversation and the kids always chuckle and it makes me look like I'm super cool because I know how to work these old ancient computers, which if they only knew that the new computers are so much more complicated and I couldn't do those if my life depended on it. But anyway, it's kind of fun.
I want to talk about kind of the operation now, because you are almost like a living museum for such a deep integral part of so many millennial lives. And so what percentage of your business is kind of local versus international? And how do you tell people who are traveling? Well, I should also say nationally too, and internationally. And how many of those people want to rent stuff, but they can't because they can't return the items?
So it's kind of fun, you know, Bend is a tourist town anyway. And right now with COVID, of course, we want everyone to be safe and only travel if, you know, if it's safe for them to do that. But I think that it's kind of fun. Most of the local resorts around here have DVD players. And I actually had someone who came in with his kids and they were traveling over from Idaho and he went down to the Goodwill and bought a DVD player, took it back to the hotel with them, came in, rented movies. So his daughters who were probably 10, 12-ish, could experience coming into the store. They went down, they, you know, rented the movies, they watched them, and then they re-donated the DVD player back to the Goodwill on their way out of town. And I thought that was amazing and funny. And I was fortunate and felt great about the fact that we could give him that experience with his kids. And that's something that, you know, it's different. They're not with their noses in their phones and they're not, you know, on their computer. They're actually sitting down watching a movie with their dad. And I thought that was kind of that thing that we all got that the new generation doesn't get.
That is so true. And then the fact that they have to make kind of those concessions, right? Not concessions, but they have to go through all of that rigmarole to make that happen. But that's how much they love the brand, that they're willing to do that. That's absolutely incredible. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it's just one of those things where, you know, our kids, we miss out on so many things now with our children, because we're all like, it's so fast paced and everyone's, you know, on, like I said, on their phones or on their computers and doing things, and nobody really connects as much as they used to. I mean, obviously in the last year, we've all spent a lot more time with our families than we did the year before that. But it's kind of one of those things that people really miss. And I hear that every day when people come in with their kids and they're walking around the store.
I want to touch on COVID, of course, 19, and just how that impacted your business, because already you're facing an uphill battle in a new digital world. And then COVID-19 hits. How did that change your business? And now that hopefully we're moving towards the tail end, obviously, like you said, we should all be careful and wear our masks and get vaccinated if we can. But just how that changed your business when it happened last March.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was another challenge for us. And, you know, we're getting pretty good about facing challenges all the time. And I think if you talk to any small business owner out there, they're going to tell you the same thing. I mean, every day is a challenge to keep your store running. And it's something that you love and you want to put in the effort. But when something like a national global pandemic happens, you really can't do anything about it. And so we just kind of took a deep breath and we're like, okay, what do we need to do to push forward? And, you know, we were fortunate that we were not one of the businesses that was required to close in Oregon. I know a lot of other states and country, you know, didn't have those options, but at least in Oregon, we have a big enough store, you know, we've got probably a good 6,000 square feet here. So we knew we could social distance. We knew we could keep everybody safe if they chose to come into the store. But at the very first part of it, it was very difficult because people were really not really used to what they should be doing. You know, the first few weeks of March, nobody really knew, hey, we should be wearing masks. We should be doing this. Some people were going overboard. Some people were like fighting and going, oh, it's not that big a deal. And nobody really realized how much of an impact it was going to have for the entire year for us. So after a couple of weeks of being closed and thoroughly cleaning the store and getting, you know, all the supplies, because the other thing was there was no hand sanitizer. There was no Clorox wipes. There was no nothing. I mean, everybody knew that the shelves were all completely empty. So it's like, can we even open? Do we even have supplies to keep our employees and our customers safe? So, you know, the first few weeks, it was really kind of a complicated thing to figure all of that out. And then once, you know, Ken called me one day and said, hey, you know, what do you think? Can we reopen and do like a curbside service or do something else and have the staff down there? And I was like, you know, I think we could. Especially after going to the grocery store, and you know how it was at the beginning, you'd go around a corner and suddenly people would stop and make sure there was nobody coming, and people were kind of staying 6 feet apart from each other, and people were really starting to be more conscientious and respectful of each other's personal space. And so I felt like we really could open back up and offer some different things. So that's what we did. We opened back up and we did curbside service where people could call in and we would walk around and pick out their movies with them on the phone and then take them out to their car. And that was something we'd never done before.
Have you relished in kind of this role of being not just a store, but also a living museum? Do you feel a sense of responsibility to kind of carry this brand on that means so much to so many? Or do you just think that you're doing your job and you're going day by day? Or do you kind of balance those two things?
I think it's a little bit of both. I feel like if I spend too much time thinking about that, it's going to, you know, get in the way. That's one of the things that somebody had asked me, how do I keep it from going to my head? That I'm like in this movie that's on Netflix that's so successful and we're doing all these things. It's like, you know what? We have always just done our thing and gave everyone excellent customer service. We thoroughly enjoy having conversations with people and hearing their stories of how Blockbuster and video stores in general, because people that come here aren't just coming because they loved Blockbuster, but some people come here because they worked at Hollywood or movie gallery. Some people come just because they used to go to their local video store that's no longer in their community, or Family Home Video, or any of those places. People are coming here just because they miss the video store experience, not just Blockbuster. And so we thoroughly enjoy having those conversations with people and hearing how it positively impacted them. So we want to just keep carrying that forward, keep doing our job, keep doing our thing. And if we can keep, if I can bring a smile to someone's face when they walk into the door just for being here, that's the best thing ever. I mean, short of working at Disneyland or somewhere like that, I mean, where else can you go where people smile when they walk in just because we're here? And we enjoy that. And I think we're going to keep doing it as long as we possibly can.
We have a few more minutes left on the program. This documentary showcases what you do for so many other people, whether that's your family or the community. Another one of my favorite scenes is when you have that barbecue for people who work there, employees and other people in the community, that you're selling more than just DVDs. Like, there's a real community spirit that you do for other people. But what do you think this has done for you personally?
It's kind of funny because I feel it really doesn't feel any different for me. I don't listen to a lot of the interviews. I don't do that because I feel like that just kind of gets in the way. And I appreciate every interview that I do. And every time someone talks about our store, I know that's only helping us keep us open. But it really doesn't change who I am and what my day is like. I mean, at the end of the day, I go home and I put on my pajamas and I put my hair in a ponytail and I start watching Downton Abbey reruns and start making beanies. my days really haven't changed any. And I don't know, I'm very grateful of the fact, like I said earlier, that so many people are enjoying and smiling about what we do here in Bend. And I really do love the kids that work here and the customers. And I know so many of them by name. And it's a really good feeling when people thank me for being here and thank me for doing my job. I mean, who doesn't love that? I'm sure if your boss walks up to you and says, "Hey, thanks for doing a great, interview today. That was fantastic." That makes you feel good. So when people come in here and tell me, "Thank you for keeping the store open and doing my job every day," it can't help but feel good. And so as long as I can continue to have that experience, I'm good with it.
If you could tell yourself, the version of yourself that began at Blockbuster 2004, one thing, what would you tell her?
Maybe not be so stressed all the time. That's how the whole beanie process, I know that you saw the movie, so you know that I make the Blockbuster beanies, but that's how that got started. That was my way of de-stressing when I go home. Now I've got this whole side hustle going out of the store that I'm like, oh my gosh, how am I going to make 500 beanies in the next, 2 months? But no, I would just tell myself to enjoy every minute and hopefully I have. I mean, I feel like I have, and you're right. I got to work with my children, and my youngest son is still here, and my older kids are not even in Bend anymore. But I've been very privileged to work for a company that allowed me to do that.
How can people stay in touch with the store and what you're doing?
So they obviously can, come see us. They can email us. We do have a website now. It's bendblockbuster.com, where they can, buy a membership card for $2 or a t-shirt and help keep the store going. But they can also send us emails there. And just a heads up, I have about 1,400 unopened emails. So I really am going to get to every single one of them. But there's a lot of people emailing us. And it's kind of crazy every day. But I will eventually get to every single person and be able to talk to them. But yeah, they can just keep in touch or come visit when it's safe for them to travel. Come visit the store. Bend is a beautiful community, and they'll definitely have a little step back in time when they walk in our location.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh,
what a
welcome.
Great story. Sandy Harding is the store manager of the last Blockbuster in the world in Bend, Oregon. Hear more about her story in the documentary, The Last Blockbuster. It's available on Netflix. Until next time, bye everybody. Thank you.